I'm Nancy Greenfield, and I'm here today on March 26, 2011, with Julie Crowley, and we are at the Rookwood Speakeasy at 24 North Main, Butte, Montana. And would you like to say your name and spell it?
You bet. Julie Ann Crowley, C-R-O-W-L-E-Y.
And can you tell us where and when you were born?
Yes, 1963. I was actually born in Great Falls, but I have lived here all my life. And my parents lived here all their lives. I am third generation. I was raised on the Anaconda Road in the middle of Dublin Gulch, which was one of the Irish neighborhoods here in Butte. I brought a couple of photos to give you a good idea of what the gulch looks like, just because it has changed so much through the years due to the mining and then now reclamation. This is actually the Anaconda Road, and this is what Dublin Gulch looked like. I don't know the year of this photograph. This is the Never Sweat here. The St. Lawrence is over here, and I believe this one is the Anaconda. Now my house, where I was raised, would be this one right here.
And is that here anymore?
No, it's not.
Is Dublin Gulch here?
The gulch is still here, but it has been reclaimed, so it doesn't have the contours that it did before mining, and of course now after mining, this whole area has been, all these houses are gone. But this gives you a really good idea. The houses that were in Dublin Gulch were very small. They're what we call either miners' shacks or shotgun houses. And because it being a mining culture here in Butte, these houses here were not built to last.
Oh.
They were built just as a, you know, quick little thing. They're not like the houses you see on the west side, the beautiful mansions and the, you know, with great foundations, etc.
Can we go stand where your house was, even if the contours are different?
Yeah, we sure could. Let's see here. Yeah, I used to walk up this way and down over to Washington School. A lot of this, of course, was gone when I was there in 63 and then on up to 74. The Anaconda Company bought out our house in 1974. And that was the same year as they were buying out the neighborhoods of McQueen and East Park Street, East Butte, Meterville, all of those areas, they were buying them out. This, of course, wasn't part of the Berkeley Pit, but I think they just wanted access to it and better access for up into the Kelly Mine. Now the Kelly Mine isn't here. The Kelly Mine was built in, I think, 1950 something, but it's not here. So anyway, we were in the midst of Dublin Gulch. It was one of the original log cabins in Dublin Gulch. And these are my grandparents here. This is John Dan Crowley. He's from Glenbeg, County Cork. And my grandmother, Julia O'Sullivan, was from Cooig, which is near Ardgroom. Glenbeg and Ardgroom are very close to, Glenbeg and Cooig are close to Ardgroom in County Cork.
Okay.
And of course, Grandma Julia, that's my namesake. This is my great grandfather. This would be my grandpa's grandfather, and that was Dan Crowley.
Is that on your dad or your mom's side?
This is my dad's side.
Okay.
My mom's side is Bohunk, and a little bit Irish and a little bit of French. And that family home was in McQueen, as I stated earlier.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Now, Dan Crowley, what's really funny about Dan and his wife, Mary O'Shea, had 8 kids in Ireland. 6 of those kids came to Butte, 4 boys and 2 girls. Out of all of those 8 children, the middle names were all Dan, even the girls. There was even a Dan Crowley. And when I met one of the guys from County Cork here in Butte, I asked him, you know, that's really strange. Why would you name every kid the same middle name? And he said, because there's so many Crowleys in County Cork that the way to distinguish which family they belong to is you give them the name, the first name as the middle name of the father. Of the kids.
Okay.
So they all ended up Mary Dan, Katie Dan, John Dan, and it just went all the way through it. It's pretty interesting. Out of the 4 boys that came to Butte, 2 died underground, and I grabbed, and it's the very typical mining legacy. Hard rock mining is a very dangerous profession. This, of course, was before Well, when they were fighting for unions and collective bargaining and safer conditions and more money, they left, you know, poor conditions in Ireland. They came here. They found a freedom in Bute that they obviously they didn't have in Ireland. This is after the turn of the century. And, you know, County Cork is known as the rebel county in Ireland. And I really think that's part of the socialization of Bute. And I often wonder if Bute would not have fought the trust, the copper trust, with the labor issues and for safety conditions and for better wages, if they didn't have that socialization from the Irish that came to Bute.
Interesting.
I think it was part of the Bute social thing, part of the culture. And I, you know, it's my theory. I'm not a socialist, you know, or socialist. I don't do sociology. Mm-hmm. I don't study sociology, but I kind of think that's part of it.
Huh, cool.
I've got pictures here. Like I said, the mining legacy, what it left was, this is the Crowley family plot in St. Patrick's Cemetery. And you've got the two boys that were killed underground, buried in the same plot, and my great-uncle Dan Crowley, another brother, and then Mary Dan Crowley. She didn't get her own tombstone, which I think is interesting, too.
Yeah, do you know why?
I don't know. I'm going to assume it's because it's a sexist woman thing. Uh-huh. So her name is on Dan Crowley's.
So what's the names of the, is it your uncles?
Yeah.
That died?
Here's Tim. This is my dad's namesake, is Tim Dan Crowley. I don't know when he came to America. He was the second to die underground. He died May 16th, 1916. And if I remember right, he was, he died in the Anaconda mine.
Okay.
And then Con, he died July 22nd, 1905. He was 29 years old, and he died in the Minnehealy mine. And this here newspaper, this is from the Mining Museum, and I highlighted and listed those,
okay,
those names for you. Very typical of St. Patrick's Cemetery. This is the step into that Crowley family plot. It's got the Celtic crosses on both sides of the name. My uncle Dan Crowley, probably one of the most interesting, he actually lived very old, into his 60s, I believe it was, 67. He worked underground. He helped save lives at the Granite Mountain Speculator disaster.
Okay.
And he was a helmet man during that disaster. And at the time, the helmets were basically like a very cumbersome deep sea diving equipment that you would see in the old movie, you know, what was it?
Voyages.
Yeah, Jules Verne's movie with the big helmets. And it was really cumbersome. And it really prevented the men from saving more men. And he was so moved by that, that he couldn't help so many of his people, that he went on and was commissioned by the Anaconda Company to invent an individual breathing apparatus.
Oh.
And it's on display up at the Orphan Girl, at the Mining Museum in the Orphan
okay.
Girl
display.
Engine room.
Okay.
And I don't have a copy of that commission paperwork. It's here in Debbie Shea's book, Irish Bute.
So this is the new one.
Yes, this is the new one.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And this is my great uncle Dan. This is his breathing apparatus.
Oh, cool.
Which is interesting about Dan too. And well, interesting about the Crowley family is that we had another great uncle, their brother who stayed in Ireland, one of the two brothers, Patrick. And he was actually beaten during a raid in Glenbeg with the butt of a rifle, and he died from that beating. He was on the anti-treaty side. And during the Irish Civil War, you had the treaty side and the anti-treaty side. The treaty that was negotiated with Michael Collins at the time did not give Ireland full freedom. And of course, the country was split. Edmund de Valera, who came to Bute, was anti-treaty. And again, part of, you know, County Cork is the rebel county, and they were very much anti-treaty. Now, I was told that my Uncle Patrick, before he was killed, came to Bute for asylum. Him and a friend came through Bute, stayed here, went up through Canada, and then ended up back in Ireland. And then he died here. This is from Rehoboam O'Dwyer's book. He died July 14th, 1924, in a hospital.
Here?
No, in Ireland.
In Ireland, okay.
Yep. Now, my uncle Dan Crowley, the one who saved lives underground, this is a newspaper that was in the family collection. I've since donated it to the archives. They've been kind enough to loan it to me. I didn't ask for white gloves. This was my Uncle Dan Crowley's newspaper, and he kept this. This is dated 1916. This is the Butte Independent. This is the only known copy of the Butte Independent for that whole year. But what makes this so unique is this is the start of the Irish Revolution right here. And this is I don't know how much of the history you know, but this is when they started the revolution. I believe it was the post office they went into and had fight with the British government.
Okay.
They were trying to fight for their rights. This is newspaper. What makes this newspaper so unique is that none of the American newspapers were printing what was going on in Ireland. It wasn't news. Because, of course, Britain was an ally of the United States. So they kind of had an anti-Irish, but it was a hands-off Irish. They didn't print it. So this is a very unique newspaper that they printed it. What makes it even better is they're calling the executions, the men that they caught that started this Irish Revolution, or Civil War, were executed. And this is what the Butte Independent called it, was murder. Because the British murdered those men. Very rare newspaper. And I always I study Butte history, and there's so much to study in this town. The socialization, the culture, the heritage, the environmental, the mining, the architecture, everything. But then there's an element of the Butte Irish. What was going on in 1916 in Butte was leading up to the huge, I don't want to call them riots, but, well, riots, yeah, they dynamited Miners Union Hall. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have this spillover of emotion, I think, that what was going on in Ireland, that, and you can see, you know, I've got two brothers uncles that stayed here, or two that were in Ireland, and two that were here, they had to have been talking, they had to have been writing letters and knew what was going on. So I really think that the emotion was running from what was going on in Ireland was also happening here in Butte. This was leading up to the Granite Speculator disaster, which was in 1917, I believe. You had there was a lot of strikes, a lot of unrest. This is Daly, Marcus Daly had died in 1900. So this is when the Anaconda Company owned the mines. This is when the men were really fighting for better wages, for shorter hours, for much better safety conditions.
And we needed that.
Definitely. Definitely. Collective bargaining, I mean it all, yeah. Parts of this too is they broke it down to be more personal. And I don't know if you know how much you know about that, but right here is this little title, A Stirring Romance in the Irish Rebellion. One of the men who was executed was married in prison at midnight, the day of his execution. It was Plunkett, and I can't remember the name of the gal, Sarah Curran. And it goes on to tell, I hate to handle this too much, of that whole event that happened there.
Wow.
So it represents so much history, this newspaper does, nationally and locally. And then, of course, internationally with Ireland. What I like here is, too, is they're calling a meeting at the Hibernian Hall for the Butte Irish who want to attend to discuss what was going on in Ireland. Where's it at here?
It's the top one.
Did you see it?
Friends of Irish Freedom and every sympathizer with the dead who died for Ireland are requested to be present at Hibernia Hall tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. It's got my great uncle's mailing out label, which, you know, they don't do that anymore for newspapers when they deliver newspapers.
So you were 3 when he died?
Yes.
Do you remember meeting him?
I don't remember him. No, I don't. Which is a shame. And he never had any kids. Mm-hmm. Actually, Jared Dan, who stayed in Ireland, had kids. Pat, who was killed, had kids. And my grandfather here had kids. But the rest of them, even Katie Dan, she married a Healy, or not a Healy. Who did she marry? I can't remember. She moved on to San Francisco, though. And she didn't have any kids. When she died, she left a bunch of money to Jared Dan back in Ireland. And Jared Dan sold the family stead there, and he moved into Cork City. These are photographs. I don't know what year these were, but this is what they raised sheep. This is what the Crowley place looked like. This is Jared Dan. This is a great uncle. And Hannah, his wife Hannah. And this is a photo of Jared Dan and his family here.
Have you been there?
Not yet. Definitely plan on it. And this is Jared Dan and then his family later.
Hmm. Well, you have a pile of stuff there. I don't know if we should finish talking about that before we move on to some other stuff.
Okay, let me finish this.
Okay.
Okay, this is a photo of my dad and his two brothers. Now, all of these boys were raised on the Anaconda Road. This is my dad here. There was a great age difference between him and the rest of his brothers. Jack had two boys. They didn't stay in Butte. They moved on. Raymond died of TB. He didn't have any kids.
And is your dad still alive?
No, dad died.
Okay.
Yeah, dad died. Going back to Butte during the Irish Revolution, or I keep saying revolution, Civil War. One of my current authors right now is Morgan Llewellyn, Irish authors. And these books are one of my favorites just because of what happened with my family. And it goes into, it's you know, historical fiction, but she has a listing of non-historical character, well, not characters, people in her book. And I went through this listing, and I wrote down and highlighted all of the characters that were in Butte throughout Butte history. Thomas James Clark, of course, Edmund de Valera. Flanagan Father, Father Flanagan. Douglas Hyde. Constance Marquez, and I don't know if I say that right. Margaret Brady Pierce.
So these are real people.
These are real Irish people that were instrumental in the Irish Civil War who had visited Butte, I'm sure, for support and money. And there was a lot of money that went out of Butte to Ireland to fund the Civil War. There's rumors of rifles. Well, I know they're not rumors. In the 70s, there were a few men, Butte men, that were taken down to San Francisco for questioning about sending rifles over to Ireland. The Mullen House, which was an Irish boarding house, it was up on Main Street. When they tore it down, and I don't know what year that was, but they found rifles in the walls. Yeah, yeah, pretty cool stuff. Okay.
I don't know if you want to start with you or if you want to start with your parents. You didn't talk about them much.
Not yet. Another artifact, and I think I'm going to donate this to the project too because I just don't want to lose it or anything, but this was a manifest sheet. Okay. This was my grandfather's when he came to...
And what was his name?
To John Crowley. John Dan.
John Dan.
When he came to America, and that's part of Debbie's book here also. And I'll just read what she wrote because she states it's much better. He left Queenstown, County Cork, on the Caronia, and that's listed here on the manifest sheet. But after the ships would dock in Manhattan, the steering passengers were moved to a waiting area, and they wore a name tag with a manifest number in large letters. The immigrants were assembled in groups of 30 according to their manifest letters and transported on a barge to Ellis Island to await final inspection. So that was my grandfather's. And of course, I've been thinking about a lot of things with my dad. And one of the stories I always remember, and it still sits with me because it had such a strong effect on me, was I remember when I was in high school, and I always knew you had to wear green on St. Patrick's Day. It was just, but you know, I never questioned, and Dad never explained. I didn't know about Dad's uncle until a friend of mine from Ireland pointed it out to me. I never knew about that. Dad never talked about that Irish history. But I always knew you had to wear green on St. Patrick's Day. And I was 18 and I walked out of the house and I had what I considered a peach ski jacket on. And it was an Obermeyer. And at the time that was the name brand, you know, of ski jackets. And I was so proud of my ski jacket and it was peach. My dad literally stood in front of me as I was going out the door and he blocked my way. And he said to me, "Where do you think you're going wearing that orange jacket?" I says, "Dad, it's peach. I'm going out." He says, "No, you're not." I says, "Dad, come on, it's peach. It's light. It's not real orange." And my dad, and I don't know what it is about a lot of the Irish that I see and I know, but they have a certain way of setting their jaw when they get mad. And my dad had a way of setting his jaw, and I just knew, everybody knew, when Dad did that, that he was mad, and it was no more. Just end it. So his jaw set like that. I thought, "Oh, okay, I better take off the coat." So I went back in. So I grabbed an old ski jacket, and it was kind of a teal green, had some blues in it, and an orange stripe. And he stopped me again. And I said, "Dad, but it's got green, you know, it's okay." And he said, "Absolutely not." And he was mad. He was very mad. So I went in and I changed. I think I put on two sweaters or something, you know, and went out. Because I ran out of coats. That's all I had. So I ran out of the house, or left the house with two sweaters on. But after it was pointed out to me, and of course, you know, you're young and you're dumb. I was so stupid. I was remiss that I did not talk to my dad more. Mm-hmm. I did not listen to his stories or ask questions. I was always too busy as I grew older. And it was really too bad because I know I'm sure he had so much to say. Mm-hmm. And I really regret that now. I really do.
And how old were you when he died?
I was in my 30s, 34. He died young. He had cancer.
Okay.
And again, the mining legacy. Both of my grandparents worked underground. My grandfathers worked underground. I had an uncle that worked underground. And then, of course, my great uncles all worked underground. So it's a strong mining family, strong ties to that industry. And I think that has to do with, I have a great passion for Butte Irish history. And I'm sure it's driven by that because, you know, I had family members that lost their lives underground. And my grandfather, Crowley, he was injured underground. He was actually maimed and had a hard time walking. So the Anaconda Company made him a security guard at the Kelly Mine, which was just up the street from the house on the Anaconda Road. So he could walk, but not carry or lift heavy things or do anything, of course, a miner would do. He was a bootlegger during Prohibition. I was told this by, like, again, not a family member, but a friend. I don't know where he had a still or any of those facts, but he did brew hooch, and they nicknamed him Sawdust because he did like to do carpentry work. And the house on the Anaconda Road was one of the original log cabins. It had been remodeled. My grandfather had remodeled it. It was one of the small shotgun houses. And
so did your family build that log cabin, or actually they moved,
They moved in. Okay. Yeah, they moved in. I was the third generation Crowley to live there.
Okay.
Now, when I lived there, it was a walk-through house. You had the front room. Then you had the kitchen. And my room was actually a porch. That was my room, and it was a very small room. Not even a twin bed would fit in it. It was so narrow. And you'd walk into this porch from the kitchen, but then the outside door was right next to my bed. So my dad had done his best to caulk the cracks, but in the wintertime, at 40-degree weather, it was still kind of cold in there, but, you know, it never bothered me. And growing up on the Anaconda Road, of course, we were called the shanty Irish. We weren't the rich Irish. And the rich Irish, the lace curtain Irish, as they were known in Butte, lived over on the west side. But growing up there, it was no big deal. It was no big deal. And I can't imagine kids now would probably be ashamed if they grew up in a porch, you know, or raised in a bedroom, had no heat, and you know, the door going out to the back was, you know, in your bedroom. Your bed was right up against it, but it was no big deal. It was just no big deal. And we had a beautiful yard, actually, which is, you know, kind of contradictory to what you saw here. I don't know if they brought soil in, because, of course, with the smelting that went in, that house was there. I'm sure there had to have been, you know, arsenic and lead in the soil. But we had a really nice.
Your family was able to grow.
Yeah.
What did they grow?
Well, there were lilacs that lined the backyard, and there was a white lilac that was my grandmother Julia's, and there was gardens. Apparently, she liked to garden, so she would grow, you know, what you can in Butte with a short growing season: carrots and potatoes and such. In 1974, when the Anaconda Company out, my mom, and at the time I thought my mom was nuts, but I was real young. I was what, 11. Her and my grandmother, Kovacic, had to move trees and bushes out of both yards into their new yard. Now, both of them did not want to buy a house on the hill because they were so afraid the Anaconda Company would come in and buy them out again and the family would be displaced. Oh. So they were adamant we had to live on the flats, which, you know, uptown, Butte is split into the uptown, which is the hill, and below Front Street we call the flats, and it's due to the geography. So we moved into the house on the flats, and they brought in rose bushes from McQueen. There's three different varieties in this yard. There's lilac bushes, but this prized white lilac that was my grandmother Julia's prize is in that yard, and it is doing fantastic.
Cool.
And you know, now that I'm older, I'm thinking my mom is actually very brilliant in doing that, because she took from those neighborhoods, which are gone. You know, especially McQueen is in the pit. They moved these living things, which represent and are memories of those homes and of those people.
The people in your family.
And not only did she take our family stuff, but my mom went to neighbors' homes in McQueen. So if you walk, you do this tour of this yard on the flats with my mom, she named the bushes. That's Mary Panion, Cookie Panion, and that's Charlie Brozovich. And so she named all of these bushes after the people that she, you know, and it's really a nice living memory that at the time I thought she was crazy. And now I'm probably going to carry on that tradition that when, you know, they die and she's out of that house.
I hope so.
I'm going to take the trees out, so.
the bushes. Can you describe what a day in the life in that house for you growing up would be like?
Well, you know, that was the era of when women didn't work. And, of course, my dad, it just amazes me. One of my dad's stories is that he didn't like working underground in the summertime because, of course, underground, once you got, I don't know what the level was, it was really hot underground. And you could touch some places underground and the rock would be 120 degrees. So he would find work in the wintertime to work underground, so he was warm underground. Then when summer came, he wanted to be outside, so he would take on different jobs in the summertime that weren't underground. And he did that for years. And what an awesome thing that there was so much employment that you could just quit and find a job the next day. You know, and he would come home, and my mom tells a great story. He came home and said, well, you know, the first time he did it, well, I quit my job today. You know, and it was kind of good news, bad news, and my mom started to get upset and worry, and he says, but the good news, I got a job starting here tomorrow, you know, so I mean, it was that quick, you know, it was within hours.
Wow.
It wasn't like he had to wait a week or 2 weeks, there was no, you know, never collected unemployment waiting or anything, it was just from job to job.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, now, so your family was able to do that, but then what happened when... The mining
shut down.
Yeah. Were you still in the house?
No. I believe they shut off the pumps, which usually if you talk to Butte people, that's the day when they stopped mining is when the Anaconda or ARCO shut off the pumps, the underground pumps. And it was that decision, of course, that flooded the Berkeley pit and made us, you know, a Superfund site beyond.
And what year was that about?
I think that was either 80 or 81.
Okay.
But prior to that, my dad, the same year that the Anaconda Company bought us out, my dad was diagnosed with colon cancer. So that was in 1974. And at that time, it was basically a death sentence. So he quit underground. He quit different things. He actually went on to be an engineer or a janitor for the Butte School District.
Oh.
And he was up at West Elementary for a long time. Had numerous cancer surgeries and surgeries due to complications of cancer. And he really was a tough old guy. He really was. I don't know how many people could have endured with and radiation. No chemo. They didn't do chemo at that time. He did have to later go on disability because if you looked at his stomach, it was like a tic-tac-toe board, you know, from all the different surgeries he had had. Removing his colon throughout the years, his intestine, it was basically down to nothing. So, and of course, the cancer got him in the end. It ended up in his liver and stuff. He died at home at the house on the flats.
Okay.
Yeah. My grandfather Crowley, he died at home in the home on the Anaconda Company from a heart attack. And my dad and my uncle actually had to push the door open because he died in front of the door to get into the house.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, was that at the home you lived in?
Yep.
Did you live there then?
No. Actually, because, you know, the age difference, my dad was a late baby. He was probably the oops baby during middle age. My grandfather, both my grandfather and grandmother were dead before I ever came along. So I didn't get to meet either one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So, did you want to talk about your family?
Yeah, I'm the only kid. Of course, like I said, my mom was Ms. Bohunk and little Italian, a little French. Never moved out of Butte. My mom never lived anywhere else. My dad did live different places, but just because of his military experience. He was in the Navy, World War II. He fought in the Guadalcanal, the South Pacific, was stationed in Hawaii. I always find it funny because he was actually he ran a club, a military club, bar in Hawaii for some time. And I always thought that was funny because my grandfather was a bootlegger.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of funny. And then Dad went back for the Korean War. Now my dad, his name is Timothy Leo Crowley. And again, the people above Front Street on the hill would call him Leo by his middle name. And below Front Street, they knew him as Tim. But growing up, when he went to join World War II, he went down to get his birth certificate. And he goes down to the office and says, Leo Crowley. And they went looking for Leo Crowley and said, there is no Leo Crowley born on that date. So he goes home, asks his mom, my grandma. She says, try Tim Crowley, Timothy Leo. Mm. So he was all of his life, up until about, you know, 18 years old, when he joined and fought in World War II, he always thought his name was Leo Crowley, and it was actually Tim. So when Mom marries him, on my grandmother's side, my grandmother had a couple of sisters, Nora, Bridget. Nora lived in Butte. Bridget moved to Idaho, and then she had a brother that stayed in Ireland. But Nora was a big, big gal. And my mom tells the story that when she met my dad and they went over to visit Aunt Nora, you know, she's meeting all the family. And they were sitting down having tea, afternoon tea, the Irish tea. And my mom was saying, I don't know, you know, she was going on and on and on. My mom's pretty outspoken, and I don't know what this thing is with the Irish. You know, his name is Tim, but they call him Leo, and that by the middle name, and I don't know why they do that, and blah, blah, blah. And apparently Nora just sat there quiet and listened and listened. Finally, she had had enough, and she literally slammed her hand on the table, and I guess all the teacups bounced up. And of course, my mom snapped to attention, and she said, "His mother wanted him called Leo, and that's what it'll be." And it was like, "Okay, yes, ma'am." So, yeah.
Do you know how your parents met?
I don't. Well, yes, I do. Dad, like I said, working above ground, worked for Consolidated Freightway. I don't know what year it was, and Mom was an office worker secretary, and they met. They worked for the same company, and that's how they met.
And this was before World War II?
No, I would say this was after World War II, but before Korea. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Let's see. How much time do we have?
I don't know when we started.
I'm not sure. My phone's off.
We started about probably 12:30.
We're 36 minutes in.
Okay.
We are now?
36 minutes.
Oh, we got a lot of time. We can relax. do you know any details of the way that your relatives got to America?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
You don't Don't have that.
Now, I knew they were all native speakers, even my grandmother. And my dad did say that my grandfather would tell him Irish stories in Irish language, bedtime stories. But my dad never learned to speak. They never really, other than that, they never apparently really spoke Irish to any of the kids. So none of the brothers learned how to speak Irish. And of course, when the parents were upset or whatever, they wanted to talk about things they didn't want the kids to know. They spoke to each other in Irish. Now I'm taking Irish language classes, so
great.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. It is a hard language to learn, and my dad did tell me that. It's a very hard language to learn.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you told any of those Irish stories?
No.
Do you remember, did your dad teach you anything that was Irish besides
He used to say a few things, but I forgot them over the years. And, again, I'm kicking myself for that. What a loss.
So were you raised in the Catholic Church?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So
adamant.
What does that mean?
Well, both my parents were Catholic.
Okay.
And they were married in Holy Savior Church in McQueen. And I went to St. Mary's Church on Main Street up here. You could see, at one time, the Irish population in Double Gulch was huge, but when I lived there, because the company was buying out people, there were only 4 girls in my Holy Communion class that made their Holy Communion.
Oh.
I mean, it just dwindled down so much.
So you were alive and saw that slowly being eaten away.
Yes, I did.
How did that affect you?
Well, I guess at the time I was too young. I do remember moving from the hill onto the flats and coming from very humble beginnings on the hill where, people were more important than the money and the prestige and the status. Moving onto the flats into an area where there were there was a feel to the area, and it wasn't that close-knit community. It was doctors and dentists kids, and my generation probably started that whole materialistic thing. And I had a hard time adjusting to that. I didn't like it. I really didn't like it. I really liked being on the hill. We were all the same on the hill. There was no status at all. It was,
How do you think that's affected you in your adult life?
Well, I think I'm still pretty humble. I don't really need, I live in a humble house. It's by no means, it's got one bathroom. And we're all running around each other in the morning trying to get ready for, school and work. And that's probably made me a bit judgmental when I look at people who I feel are very materialistic and who care about status and who care about, driving the best car or whatever. I think there's more out there, compassion and such.
Did you know about these uncles that died in the mine?
You know how I knew about them and what I remember about them? As you can see from these photographs, my mom still, it was a family tradition on Memorial Day and then later in the year, to go to every, and I'm not kidding you, every gravesite on both sides of the family. It was a day outing, and put up flowers and cut grass and clear away garbage. I mean, this is what we did. And my mom still does this. I go with her once in a while, but my son really likes doing it. And this is how I remembered those uncles. They were names on a tombstone. And that's all I really knew of them. And when mom dies, I'll continue that tradition of still caring for the graves and remembering them.
Do you know any details about how their story in the mines, or did they?
No, I don't.
I
don't know if it was cave-ins. I don't know if it was from dynamite explosions.
Were
I don't know.
Were they married?
No.
Didn't leave any family?
Nope.
So that was, I guess, lucky. But
now Raymond, my dad's brother, did have one child, and I believe she was born in Butte, but they divorced, and we've never heard from the ex-wife or the child at all. So we don't know what happened there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch out cards here real quick.
Okay.
While you ponder here.
Yes.
only one thing. Well, yeah.
Okay, ready. You have something you want to talk about.
Well, you know, I've often wondered about how Butte has held on to so much of its heritage and so much of the cultures, the different cultures, the Italians in Meaderville and the Bohunks and obviously the Irish because they dominated the town. And again, another theory of mine is that the Butte, you know, Butte was Democrats. We still are. And Republicans tend to be heavy on American exceptionalism and heavy on, very heavy on American patriotism. And Democrats don't tend to be that heavy. And I really think part of the way Butte was able to hold on to all this history and continue these traditions is because we are Democrats. And I think that really has had a lot to do with the way, again, the way the town has evolved and the socialization and how it has become what it has.
Well, you guys really seem to value community.
Yes, yes.
And?
Yep. You know, and of course, still at work, I mean, we still consider ourselves, I work with a guy who's third generation Italian, whose grandparents lived in Meaderville, came from, you know, Italy. He married an Irish gal. So, you know, I call him, he'll call me a Harp or a Mick, and I'll call him, you know, the Dago or you know, and my mom is a Bohunk, and probably more derogatory, I work with a Mexican who is third generation Mexican here in Butte. Yeah. His grandfather was a contract miner. His father was a contract miner. Worked in the Belmont, which was a lot of Mexicans worked in the Belmont.
Oh.
And, you know, he's a spick, and he's not offended by it. We're, you know, we still call each other those names. You know, you just know, you know, they're from the old country, and their old country was Italy. It still is that way. Now, I don't know if my kids will be doing that. I don't know if it'll end there, but it still goes on, whether it's good or bad.
It's kind of a meaning of endearment.
Definitely, definitely. You know, the saying goes that if a Butte guy and a Butte guy are fighting, and you're not from Butte, you just let them fight. If a Butte guy and an Anaconda guy are fighting, and you're from somewhere else, you don't get into it either. And it's kind of a family thing. It really is. Because if you get into it between a Butte and Anaconda guy, both of those guys are going to go after you. And it's just kind of this thing. We can say what we want about each other. We're family. We can, you know, give each other crap all the time. But as soon as that outsider comes in, and I know I'm that way too. If you know, I hear somebody from out of town talk derogatorily about Butte or do the typical Butte bashing, I get very upset. You know, I lost uncles underground. I had, you know, a grandparent maimed underground. I had, you know, my family sacrificed a lot. And it wasn't because they were doing this huge thing of electrifying the country. That wasn't their vision at all. They were just trying to make a living. They were working. That's all they were doing. And so, the legacy is we do have a Superfund site, and we do have all of these things, but at the same time, we have electricity, and we have copper running water, copper pipes. We have better living conditions because of what the men here and women went through. So I do take it very personal, and it's kind of a hit on my heritage when I hear that stuff. Butte is an incredible city. It's got so much here that's so untold yet. You know, and this is why I think this project is excellent, because there's stories out there that are undocumented, that are just absolutely incredible. Yeah.
Well, now, do you have children?
I do. I have two, a boy and a girl.
And
my son, Jesse Radcliffe, and he's 21, and my daughter, Christina Radcliffe, she's 18. And her name was in the paper today. She made the honor roll, so I was very excited.
Yeah. And they still live at home?
They do. No, well, my daughter does, obviously. My son is out. He is following in the blue-collar tradition. I did want him to go to college, but he is working at a fabrication shop. He is a pipe fitter welder, so he's sticking with the blue collar. My dad did a lot of welding, just tinkering at home and such, and Jesse was very, you know, was exposed to that. And of course, my son idolized my dad.
And my son paid attention. I didn't think he did, but he did. So I'm still.
It means a lot.
It does. Mm. It does. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Let's see. Are you married?
I'm remarried. I'm divorced and remarried. Married a great guy, Tom Malloy. Very happy with him. He has two grown children also. And he's not Butte Irish. He is actually New York Irish.
Oh, really?
He came to Butte on a football scholarship, went to Tech,
oh.
And stayed.
And that's how you met. How did you meet?
We actually met through a mutual interest in music, through different concerts after my divorce. And, of course, he was divorced. So.
Okay. So you're interested in music.
Yeah, definitely.
Can you talk to us about that?
Well, I am a piano student. Probably will be a lifetime piano student. And of course, love what's going on here in Butte with the Irish music. Sean Noe's music is absolutely pristine, incredible. I love it. I've got some piano books here too that I would like to, Irish piano books, music books that I would like to donate. These actually are not from the Crowley family, but which is very typical here in Butte. I bought these second edition books a couple of years ago and came out of an Irish family home here in Butte, part of the estate sale, and the owner of second edition bought them and then sold them at her store. And I showed these to Father Burke, and he was absolutely, he did cartwheels over these. These were published in 1892.
Wow, those are cool.
Yeah, so these will go to the project, but I do want copies so I can play the music later. And you can tell,
have
they're just in really tough.
Have you listened to any of the music in there?
I actually had my piano teacher play them for me. And she's a much better, obviously, musician than I am. And these are songs, some of them I'm not familiar with, so I couldn't even be able to, you know,
try.
But she played a couple. They're beautiful.
They were
just
me?
Beautiful.
Huh.
So instead of leaving them on my shelves where they're going to get beat up, they'll be better off at the archives with the project.
Okay. Well, do you want to tell us about your history, your life?
Well, Butte educated, obviously, went to Washington School on the Hill. That school has been demolished, till 74 when we moved. Then I went to Whittier School, East Junior High, Butte High School, and educated Montana Tech and the University of, Billings.
And what did you take?
Communications and accounting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And do you know if there's a reason for that?
Well, I started my degree. I work with Florida Montana Power Company and was there through the transition to Northwestern Energy. And I started actually on my degree through the educational reimbursement program they have. I haven't paid for one of my classes. It's all been through the company, which I'm very grateful for. I mean, it's been like a full ride scholarship. It's taken me years to do it. Went to Tech. But then when my kids were born, I quit doing it. It was just too much working full time, raising kids. So I quit. Now that my kids are raised, I've been doing it now online. I only had my senior year to do.
Oh, wow.
So I've been doing
Is
it online.
Is this in accounting or in communications?
Both, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I started out in accounting, had taken quite a few accounting classes, just had to take two more through Billings, and then took some communication classes. So.
What do you do for the power company?
Right now, I am an administrative assistant in the drafting department.
Okay.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep.
That doesn't have to do with accounting.
No, not yet. Hopefully, when I get my degree, it'll do something.
So, how did you get interested in the gathering project?
Well, I was aware of it through Bernadette. Was actually here for. The National Folk Festival last year, and she gave a speech when they had the miners sitting over. It was really cool. They had the theme last year was the mining, was the theme, and so they had a few of the old timers sitting around talking about mining in one of the tents, and one of those was John T. Shea, who of course is one of Butte's very respectable Irish guys, he was there, and Bernadette was there because of John T., I believe, and she was handing out her flyers on the gathering project, and I just, it really, you know, I perked up and thought, this is a great idea.
Was this your first interest in knowing more about your Irish?
No, you know, because I do study Butte history, and I did, you know, I do tours.
Okay, well, so how long have you been doing that?
Well, I started out in the speakeasy here, 6 years ago, and I didn't do it for money. I just did it because it was just a passion, and because I love Butte history, and to help the guys get the business started, to get Old Butte Historical Adventures started. I didn't want to be taken from their funds, and it was a ton of fun. I loved it. I love, you know, the tours down here in the speakeasy. I mean, holy cow, how many times do you get to be in a speakeasy? You know, it's cool. But no, I knew about my Irish history, of course, St. Patrick's Day, and of course, going to Irish Catholic churches. I really didn't know that there was any other religion than Irish Catholic, I think, until I was in junior high. I mean, it was, every wedding we went to was an Irish Catholic friend or family. There was, you know.
Are there Protestant Irishes
no.
in Butte?
No.
There
no.
isn't?
No.
Okay.
No. You know, an interesting story in Butte history was the 4th of July riot in 1894, I think it was. Did I write that down? Yeah, 1874. The American Protective Association was throughout the United States during that era, and they were anti-Irish. They were anti-immigration. And there was a faction of them here in Butte. And there's about, I think, is it 200 or 2,000 of them? It must have been, I'm not sure on that, I won't say. But one of them was a bar owner, a couple of them were bar owners, and they took the bunting, the American bunting, and they formed the letters of the APA. And of course, the Irish Catholics in Butte knew what that meant. They were anti-Irish. So they were asked to take this bunting down, and they didn't do it. Well, it started a riot. And of course, dynamite at the time was easy accessible. And there was a couple of sticks of dynamite that went off in front of one of the bar owners' bars, broke the windows. And the sheriff at the time was Irish, and it was Sheriff Dugan. And he approached the bar owner, you know, please quit this, just take it down. And in the meantime, the streets are filling with thousands of men, you know, Irish Catholics. And he refused to take the bunting down. Well, then another bar owner just a few, you know, blocks down did the same thing. So the crowd moves down to that bar. Well, it erupted in a riot, and they actually had to call in the state militia to quell this riot that happened in Butte, simply because, you know, these bar owners flew the anti-Irish APA letters. And it did take, there were a couple of men killed. A great quote, though, is one of the bar owners said, and this building still stands. It's the Broadway Antiques on the corner of Broadway and Hamilton Street. The owner of that building, it was John Hamilton from Ireland, and the keystone over one of the entrances into that building has the Irish harp surrounded by shamrocks. And one of the bar owners during this riot, he said, you know, freedom of speech, I can put these letters out if I want to, blah, blah, blah. And if John Hamilton can put an Irish harp on his building, I can put these letters out. And, you know, the sheriff was basically said, for the love of God, please yeah. stop this. You're creating this riot of thousands of men. Huh. So anyway, it took the state militia to quell that. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. And I believe it was in the 1920s. Butte had a chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, and they called themselves the Continental Chapter, Continental, of course, spelled with a K. And they were anti-Irish Catholic, too. And it was a small group, and it's a great story. The Irish mail carriers knew who all the members were of the Ku Klux Klan in Butte. And what they basically did was they intercepted all the incoming and outgoing mail to these members, which is illegal as hell. I mean, it's a federal offense. You're taking, you know, mail. Mm-hmm. But they just quit delivering and taking their mail. And what happened is the Ku Klux Klan, they just lost communication. And they just disappeared without any violence.
Wow.
But it was the Irish mail carriers.
I
want to say 1922, but I'm not real sure on that.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Do you have any favorite stories that your family used to tell?
Not that I remember. I think I told you most of them.
You do? Okay. Is there any other family heirlooms or keepsakes that aren't here that you want to talk about?
Well, I've got both of my grandparents, Julia O'Sullivan and John Crowley's steamer trunks that came with them when they came from Ireland. Mm-hmm. Now, my grandfather's is actually much nicer than my grandmother's. It had trays that fit in it, and the construction is just a little bit fancier. And when, now my dad got one and then his brother got the other one. And I always wanted it. My mom thought I was nuts, you know, it's a piece of junk. And I mean, it doesn't really have any antique value to them, but I have both of them. And it's just like I said, you know, the sentimental value. That's probably being raised in humble beginnings. They're, you know, it's all sentiment. I mean, who cares about a plant coming from a yard, you know? I mean, that's kind of where I'm at.
Hmm. Is there anything else?
Well, I do want to point this out to you. This is more of the Gdublin Gulch. And this is, of course, the mining legacy in Butte. As you can tell, I love Butte history, so I collect a lot of Butte. This is a great aerial view. This would be the Dublin Gulch. So this gives you an idea that it actually was this protected little gulch within the geology of Butte, or geography. This over here would actually, this now is where the tailing, Yankee Doodle's tailing pond is. There's an earthen dam, man-made dam. But the pit has basically taken all of this, taken over, where are we at here? Meterville, McQueen, this is all gone into the pit. So that gives you a really good idea of what the...
Now, where would the interstate be?
It's behind these mountains here.
The interstate is?
Mm-hmm. Going to Helena? Yeah.
Oh, that, okay, the Helena.
Yeah.
Okay, now where would I-90 be?
Way out on the flats.
Okay.
You're looking.
All the hill.
This is a hill. Yep.
Okay.
This from here down would actually be about the flats.
Okay.
You've got Missoula Gulch running through here. And all this now is all full of houses.
So where are we at about on there?
We are on Main Street, so let's see, here's the old courthouse. We are probably right in around here.
Okay.
Now keep that in mind. Okay, you see what that hill looks like? And the gulch. Now later, this is 1955. This is when they started the Berkeley Pit. So where I was showing you, here's the Kelly Mine, Dublin Gulch is up in here. But remember that hill?
Yeah, oh wow.
Now when they started the Kelly, they did block caving, which is different than the typical underground mining. This was a new form of mining.
But you said block caving.
Block caving. What they would do is they would go in and they would block out huge rooms, or blast out huge rooms, and they wouldn't reinforce. Instead of doing tunnels and following a vein, they would just go in and blast out these huge rooms, which are probably the size of houses. So all of this, of the hill that I showed you in the early one, this is all subsidence from that block caving. This has now since been, this is now part of the Berkeley Pit. Here's the Berkeley Pit started way over here. It expanded all the way over here and took out Meterville. Here's McQueen and here's East Butte.
Meterville and McQueen. Was.
Yeah, it took out all of those.
Now, did you ever go to the Columbia Gardens?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. When I see stuff on the Columbia Gardens, I still cry. It's a great loss.
So what
great
is loss. Your memories of the Columbia Garden?
You know, I remember, and I walk through the trees like that, the same variety of trees, I remember the smell. Now, there's certain trees that, you know, how trees smell. They aren't pine trees, but they have a certain smell to them, and that's the first thing. Every time I walk by that, a tree like that, that has that smell, it's a kind of a cottonwood. And it brings me to the Columbia Gardens. Mm. Always fun, beautiful, beautiful place. Beautiful theme park.
Did they still have the bus When you were a kid, did they take you out there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they did.
Yeah. But living in McQueen, we were real close. Or not living in McQueen, but my grandparents living in McQueen. We used to, it was just a hop, skip, and a jump. Now, here's the highway.
To Helena?
I couldn't even explain. Yeah, okay. This is all gone. But it was just right over here.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it wasn't too far from McQueen. There were kids from McQueen that would ride their bikes over to the Columbia Gardens. It wasn't very far at all.
Okay, I think I used to come in on that road when I was
a kid. I'm sure you did, yeah.
Yeah. Do you partake in any Irish traditions or rituals? Or, I don't know, you know anything about the Irish funeral rites?
You know, I do remember the Irish funerals in Butte. Now, I didn't go to any funerals or wakes, I guess wakes at home, in any homes. But just kind of like I said about Irish weddings and stuff, they were always, you know, everybody we knew seemed to be Irish. So you always went to these wakes, and it was a huge deal. There was always a lot of people there. And I remember Dad shaking hands, how you doing? And you'd be there 2 hours later thinking, geez, could we please get out of here, you know? And they'd be back there bullshitting and you know, they were big. I remember those wakes being very big in Butte. 2 days, 3 days, waking of somebody was no, you know, that was normal.
Wow.
Now I don't even think they do a wake. I don't know if I've...
See, I didn't grow up with wakes, so
okay.
I'm trying to learn about them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I do remember them being a big deal, a lot of people. And again, I don't know if other denominations do wakes or not. I don't know. Like I said, all I know is the Irish stuff, Catholic stuff.
let's see. Can you think of anything that I should be asking you?
No, I don't.
Well, let's ask this question, and if we think of some more, we'll go back to this other stuff. But what does your Irish heritage mean to you?
You know, and it's the culmination of all of this discussion. And I can't just isolate it to Irish heritage. It obviously ties into the mining heritage here in Butte, too. You know, I can't ignore the fact that all of the men in my family worked underground. It's there. You can't ignore the fact that these men came here, these women came here for a better life. Even though the mining was hard and they weren't making as much money, it was actually better than what they left. Now, my grandfather, my dad did tell me that he never did want to go back to Ireland and visit. My dad wanted to take him over after World War II, especially. Dad had some money, and he offered to take Grandpa Crowley back to Ireland to visit, and Grandpa said, no, I'm never going back. My dad did want to go, but he never did. And I think that was because of a lot of his health issues, you know, with the cancer through the years. I definitely want to go back. But, you know, I guess it's more of the Irish heritage is not, it's not glamorous in any way. And you know, as they tell historians, you're not supposed to judge history by today's standards. And don't romance history. It's really easy to do that. But these men and women were just normal people wanting something better, like everybody else. And, you know, it's like the Mexicans wanting to come here now. People just want to do better, and that's just a very normal thing. They want to get away from what was oppressive, and, you know, they want those freedoms. They want that chance. Would I be here if they didn't come to America? Probably not. You know, it's hard to say. And it's not that I have absolutely no bad thoughts or anything about Ireland. I mean, even about the Civil War, you know, America had a Civil War. It's what people do. And I'm not ashamed of anything my family did. It's an incredible history, and it's just something that cannot be forgotten. It cannot be overlooked. And it, obviously, you know, the nature versus nurture, I am a product of what happened. I am a product of all of that culminating to one thing. hopefully I'm doing good. Hopefully, you know, I don't want these people to be forgotten. These people went through hell. So the Irish heritage, you know, I think the Irish are, I think they're an incredible race. I think they're an incredible people. Storytelling, doing this, you know, it goes back to the bards. This is just, you know, an extension of the Irish storytelling with the bards, the Irish bards. Their music, you know, when I look at the Ellen pipes, which is the only indigenous Irish musical instrument, what an amazing thing. And those people play that. And, you know, it takes skill, it takes practice, it takes talent, it takes practice. And yet, you know, they're a very intelligent people. When they come over here and visit and I talk to them, they're also highly educated. And I think that, you know, Americans have gotten really lazy. And, you know, I guess it's from watching these stupid reality shows, too, that a lot of us don't play musical instruments. And it seems like so many of the Irish do. Mm. And the famous authors, the incredible authors, and the literature that comes out of Ireland, and now even their films. I just think they're an incredible, intelligent race, and they're fun-loving people. They really are. And of course, you mix that with the Bute pride of what we have, and it has made for a town that is, I don't think you're going to find anywhere else. You know, when the Irish came to Bute, there was none of the signs that said, no Irish need apply. You never saw that in Bute, because of course Marcus Daly sent word, any Irishman would automatically have a job in his mines. And that's why we got the huge influx of the Irish. And this was their town. They built it. You know, you look at Curtis Music Hall, which is now Gamers Cafe, and it's got shamrocks in the architecture. John Hamilton's building is still there with the Irish Keystone. The Irish Harp Keystone. This is the town that the Irish built. This is what they built. One of the Copper Kings was Irish, and then foremen, superintendents of the mines, business owners. This is their town. And
so even though the Copper Kings, were those the Lace Irish?
Marcus Daly definitely would have been Lace Curtain. But of course, he built his family home down in Hamilton.
Okay.
You know, and that's where he, and Anaconda is his town. He built Anaconda.
Okay.
Yep.
So what does it, I don't know,
it's hard to sum up.
How does it feel now for you with your relationship with your Irish friends or family members here?
Well, you know, sometimes I feel humbled, and I think, you know, if we get Irish visitors from Ireland, it's like, well, you're the real Irish, we're not. You know, you're the one, I'm going to listen to what you say. But then there's the flip side of that, too, because, well, this is what the Irish did when they got here. And it's a synergy, it's symmetrical, it's, I don't think you can tell one story without the other. And like I pointed out, you know, what was going on in Ireland during the Civil War there, I know it was spilling out here. I know it was. It was affecting the Bute Irish. And how could it not? You know, I mean, I've got great uncles. You know, holy crap, one of us got beat to death over there and two of us died underground here. I mean, how do you not be affected by that? You know, and I know that's probably why my dad was so adamant about me wearing orange. Holy crap, he had an uncle that was beat in Ireland for the anti-treaty side, and then my daughter is a Crowley and is going to walk out of this house wearing orange?
Don't think so.
You know, now I get it. At the time, I didn't, you know, but now I get it. And I'm the same way. You know, a couple of years ago, there's a Bute kid. He's not Bute born and raised, but he was wearing a Silver Bow County orange jumpsuit, like he just escaped from the jail. And it was meant to be a joke and part of the frivolity and everything. And when I saw him, I just stopped dead in my tracks. And I stiffened up and bristled up. And I thought, oh my God, he's wearing orange. He's going to get the crap beat out of him. You know, and I'm looking around for some of the old timers thinking, oh boy. So I went up to him and I said, you know, you're not supposed to be wearing orange. Well, why, you know? And then it dawns on me, well, you know, he's the same way I was. You know, probably another generation from that. But And I don't know, you know, I do still think that's an issue in Ireland. I don't think I would wear orange on St. Patrick's Day in Ireland now. But that would be a question for Bernadette. But I won't do it just because, you know, it's been...
Right. You just understand.
And I saw a girl, she was from out of town, same year. She was wearing an orange coat. Oh, you're not supposed to be wearing orange. Do you know why? You know, and so I find myself, you know, doing these things. And one kid had an Irish or an orange do-rag thing tied around his head. And he's a Bute boy. He's Irish. I stopped him. Are you kidding? So, I mean, it's you know, it got handed down.
Now,
it's ingrained in me that...
So how old were you when you started, like, maybe being more interested in this, in learning about the Irish?
You know, what is it about having kids that makes you go into your family and
where
start digging around? What is it about having a kid that makes you do that? So probably 20 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's neat.
You start digging around for those roots.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Does your family have any recordings?
No.
No, okay. I don't know, is there anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay.
That's great. Do you want to maybe show us around this room?
Oh, sure, sure. Our magazine, and this was done in 1950. And these were interviews of Bute people. And these are songs of the Bute miners. And it talks about the Irish in here. What they would do is, I'm going to put my coat on, I'm starting to get cold. It would be the melody and the harmony, the music of Irish songs, but they would put new words to them that would pertain to mining underground in Bute. And this is just a really great, it's a great article. Oh. Somewhere in here, I pointed out where. Oh, did I grab the wrong one? It's probably my copy. I thought I did it in here. Well, anyway, in here it goes specifically into the Bute Irish and different songs.
Is there one you had something highlighted?
I did, and I must have left that copy at home.
Well, you can email me or whatever. Tell me which one, which page.
Okay, I will do that. Oh, here's the one about Tipperary. I just saw that. Anyway, it's just a really cool article.
Okay. All right. So which thing are you giving?
You can have that.
Okay.
And then this. Could I borrow a pen?
Yeah. I suppose we'd better make a list of these things that you give us.
Yeah, for your records, because obviously I've got copies at home.
And you've got a... Do we have a deed of gift?
Yeah, I have to do a deed of gift. Does that have a list on it, or should I make a separate list? No, it doesn't. I'll write on the back of it.
That's probably a good idea.
Oh no, it's on the tombstone. Never mind. Okay, there's that guy. There's Colin. My hands are freezing.
Yeah, it's chilly down here.
Yeah. There's no heat.
It must be nice in the summer.
It is, I loved, yeah. It was nice.
Oh, I was going to ask you about your ring. Is that an aquamarine or is that a green?
This one?
Yeah.
That's a yogo.
It is a yogo.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Awesome. I used to have a yogo sapphire
ring. Yeah. Well, when Tom, you know, of course, Tom is 100% Irish American. All four of his grandparents were from Ireland. And the tradition in the family was to give sapphires for wedding engagement rings instead of diamonds. So when we decided to get married, I mean, we'd lived together 3 years, we're old, you don't care. It really wasn't a big deal, but then we started thinking about insurance and stuff like that, so. He said, I won't buy you a diamond.
I'll get you a sapphire. And I thought, well, cool. Let's make it more personalized than that. We'll do a Montana sapphire.
Yeah.
So.
That's what my grandma always has.
Sapphires?
Yeah, Yoro sapphires.
They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. One question I wanted to ask you was, are you into rocks? Did your family bring crystals home?
Yep. In fact, it's in my, still at my mom's. My whole collection is at my mom's house in her basement. Yeah.
I collect rocks.
Oh, do you? You're a rock on, huh? Let's see if you have that one. Do you want a copy of that?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get you a copy of that. I didn't make a copy. And then when we did the Irish Butte book, I'm gonna interview Debbie Shea, and I'm gonna have her donate a copy of her book.
Okay.
That was Bernadette's request, so.
Okay.
I'll have her do that. But my family, this is in here and stuff. You want me to take that to the archives too, then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking about a lot of this stuff. I keep thinking better. Some of it's just too valuable and get lost at my house. At least up there, it's humidity controlled and temperature. And open that door of light.
And this is the same thing as written in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 different languages.
Yeah.
Are any of them Irish?
Oh, I bet there is. I never thought of that. Well, there's German.
So is this a copy of something? Because it doesn't look very old.
No, there is no Irish in there. Mm-hmm. No, this is, the Mining Museum just put this out not too long ago, and it's a list of all the mines and the men that were killed.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the last two are. One of them is Russian, but
oh, wow.
I'm not sure which one. Cool.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, do you want to document that? This I already donated a long time ago. I don't know, maybe, can I double? I mean, it would be nice to have this cross-referenced.
You could probably just request that.
Okay.
That it's cross-referenced with the gallery.
Because if anybody wants to do research, I think that is just one of the most.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So is this going with me or with you?
I'll take it up to the archives.
Okay.
When I bring that those piano books up
there.
Those music books.
Okay.